Okie doke. Now we are going to go up to Brush Prairie and talk about mushrooms. Today we're going to be talking about a little bit of a different aspect of gardening. We're going to be talking about mushroom cultivation. Yes, it can be done. And I'm really, really intrigued by this idea. I've gotten very interested in growing mushrooms. And last weekend, I was at a mushroom cultivating workshop here up in Brush Prairie. And so I thought that this would be a great subject for our listening audience. So I'm here today in the garden of Tony McMigas. And he's the one who led this workshop. So we're going to just talk to him about it. And when I was here, we were working with growing oyster mushrooms in plastic bags. So how are you doing, Tony?
Pretty well. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. It's fun. It's nice here and beautiful piece of property you have.
Another day in paradise.
Another day in paradise. Yes, this is paradise. So how long have you been involved in the mushroom world?
Probably about 11 or 12 years now.
And have you been cultivating them for quite a while?
About 11 or 12 years now.
Oh, so you started by cultivating.
Yes, I did. It all started because of a failed attempt to grow organic ginseng up here. Oh. And then I had shade cloth and space and equipment and just thought, you know what? Ginseng didn't work. What am I going to do now? And then I came across an article on medicinal mushrooms. And the more I read about the medicinal properties of mushrooms, the more I wanted to grow them. So one thing led to another.
Well, and here we are. And I think that mushrooms are a truly fascinating group of organisms. But now when I was here, we were working with oyster mushrooms. So can you tell us why oyster mushrooms?
Because they're really easy. They're very forgiving. They're very aggressive. Yeah, they're just super easy. Anybody can grow oyster mushrooms.
Okay. Well, why don't you give us a little rundown about if someone said, okay, I'm going to give this a try, what they need and how they would get started?
The easiest way would be to buy a bag of commercially produced grain spawn. Mm-hmm. And the grain spawn is fully colonized kernels of grain, usually rye, sometimes oats, that have been colonized by the particular fungus that you want to grow, mm-hmm. in this case, oyster mushrooms. So with the sterilized grain, you're basically have a bag of seeds in a sense, because mm-hmm. every one of those kernels can colonize a certain amount of substrate. And the substrate that we use is pasteurized straw. Mm-hmm. So you go get some wheat straw or oat straw and pasteurize it for an hour at about 160 to 170 degrees.
When you say pasteurize, what exactly do you mean?
It's just getting the substrate up to 160 to 170 degrees for an hour. It's different than full sterilization. Mm-hmm. That's what makes it so easy to do. If you can boil water, you can grow oyster mushrooms, yeah. Basically, yeah.
Okay, I'm getting a little distracted by this dog action we've got here. We've got a beautiful dog and a puppy. They're just bouncing around here having fun. Okay, they're settled down now. Cute. Okay, so you have straw. Just like the bale of straw that you'd buy at a store, farm store?
Like at a feed store. Mm-hmm. And then you want to shred it, get it in smaller pieces, maybe 3 to 4 inch mm-hmm. average. I run it through a chipper shredder. It seems to do a pretty good job. Some people use a lawnmower or a weed eater in a garbage can. Mm-hmm. Some people have actually used scissors, but I don't have the patience for scissors. Mm-hmm. So chipper shredder works really well. In a full-size bale of straw, you can probably get about 16 bags mm-hmm. of the size that we were doing. From one bale of straw. And one bag of commercial grain spawn is plenty of spawn to inoculate all 16 bags.
Mm-hmm. And where does one get this spawn?
My favorite place mm-hmm. to get spawn is from Northwest Mycological Consultants, and they're down in Corvallis, Oregon. Super nice people.
Well, that's nice, and that's close to home.
It is.
Yeah, and I know there's other mail order places to get it, but I'm always for buying locally if possible.
That and they are, in my opinion, the best source in this area.
That's great. Okay, so you have your straw, and it's pasteurized, and you have your spawn, and what do we do with it?
Once the straw is fully pasteurized in an hour, take it out of the water. Actually, the way we do it is in a 55-gallon drum of water over a propane burner. In baskets, you can use pillowcases or burlap sacks, too. Sometimes it's easier to get them in and out of the barrels. Mm-hmm. So once it's been in the water for an hour, take it out, put it on a table or a tarp, a comfortable work height, because you don't want to be bending over on the ground. Mm-hmm. and drain it. Get the temperature down to 100 or less.
Okay.
You know, around 90 is probably a good safe temperature. Anything over 100 and you're going to kill your spawn. So that's pretty important. And then spread it out, let it cool. You want to be careful that your hands are clean and everything, your bags are clean. You can't reuse old dirty plastic bags. Even though it's not a sterile process, you still want to be as clean as possible. So we usually use rubbing alcohol to spray off our hands.
And what kind of bags do you use then? You don't just use like grocery bags?
No, we just use clear polyethylene plastic bags.
Okay.
You can buy them through any number of commercial shipping companies. I buy mine from Uline.
Oh, yes. I know Uline.
Yeah. So what you're going to do is take your straw, once it's cooled, put a layer about 3 to 4 inches into a bag, take your grain spawn, and we usually figure on about a pint of spawn or less per bag.
Uh-huh.
Usually about 2/3 of a pint is what we end up using. So put in 3 to 4 inch layer in the bottom of the bag, take a little bit of your grain spawn, sprinkle it in an even layer, take another 3 to 4 inches over the top of that, then another layer of spawn, then some more straw, then some more spawn, until you get up to the top of the bag, and then compact everything down, because it does need to be tight, and our dogs are too happy here with company. And then once you get to the top of the bag, compress it, twist the bag tight, and then put a zip tie or rubber band, or just tie it closed. And then at that point, just set it aside, wait about a week, is what we do, 6 to 7 days, and then after that period of time, go ahead and poke holes in the bag, usually about 6 holes on each side. And what that does is starts to let oxygen in and the CO2 out. Normally, with the oyster mushrooms, in 3 to 4 weeks, you should have mushrooms.
Well, I know the bag that I brought home from this mushroom cultivating workshop, I actually haven't poked the holes in it yet, and I have to do that because I think it's time.
Today's the day.
But it's getting this wonderful aroma.
Yeah, the mycelium does have a fragrance signature, is what some people will call it.
Mm-hmm.
And not all mycelium smells the same. It's actually, for some people, a way to tell the variety of mushrooms. I mean, people go into the woods and say, oh, yeah, I can smell the matsutake.
Oh.
And it's true. If you're close enough to the ground and they're nearby, you can smell them because they have a very unique fragrance signature. But the oyster mushrooms, yeah, they have a pleasant smell to them, I say.
No, I think it's very pleasant. Now, what are the dimensions of the bags that you use?
I think the ones we were using are about 3 inches wide by 5 to 6 deep and about 20 inches tall.
Okay. Is that pretty standard?
Yeah, it's a pretty common size. We've been using those pretty much for the last 10, 11 years.
Okay, so once you have the holes poked in the bags, what conditions do you want to hold these bags? Like light, humidity, etc.?
They do need light. The only mushrooms that grow in the dark are the white button mushrooms, and that's because of the lack of light that they're white. If you take a white button mushroom and expose it to light, it will first become a cremini mushroom, and then if you let it grow up to full size, it becomes a portobello.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised when I learned that early on.
Yep.
They charge us a lot more when they get bigger.
Well, they have to because it takes longer to grow them, so they take up space longer in the grow rooms.
Can you grow those at home?
You can, but you need a composted substrate, so it's a little more involved. There are places, I think, that you can buy kits. I don't know how successful they are. I actually did try one about 20 years ago, a button mushroom kit, and had a huge failure.
Oh, well. Well, I think these are going to all be a success based on what you've told me. So this is pretty exciting. But now, so we have the bag of mushroom spawn and it's starting to grow a little bit. We've poked our holes in it and it's in light. Does it need a certain temperature?
60 degrees, 60 to 70.
Yeah, just average room temperature?
Yep, absolutely. If you're comfortable, the mushrooms will be comfortable.
That's a good way to look at it. And then the mushrooms are going to just start popping out of those holes?
Yes.
And then you pick them and you cook them up and you eat them and then do you get more mushrooms out of the same bag?
Normally, yes. You should get 2 or 3 flushes of mushrooms. After you harvest, make your first harvest, you can just set the bag aside and wait. And depending on temperature, light, and humidity, normally within about 2 weeks, you'll see new mushrooms starting to form. Sometimes they'll be coming out of the holes that you poked in the bag. Other times they'll just try to grow wherever they want. And if that's the case, you can just cut a small slit or a flap near there and let them out.
Well, that sounds really exciting. And I think what would be kind of neat for people who wanted to do this is maybe to go in with some friends, because as I recall by looking at some websites for the spawn, is you have to buy a whole bunch. I mean, you can't just buy a little bit for one or two batches. So it might be kind of a fun group project for somebody.
Yeah, it could be a lot of fun. A bag of spawn delivered, at least in Oregon and Washington, isn't going to cost you more than about $30 from Northwest Mycological.
Oh, I was looking at the wrong websites then.
I tell you, Northwest Mycological, they're the best people out there.
That's fantastic. I'm going to make a little field trip down there one of these days. So that sounds very doable and kind of exciting, and what a fun project. Mushrooms are so cool. But the other thing I wanted to talk about that you showed me when I was here was you actually have oyster mushrooms growing in the open garden in an old raised bed area topped with straw?
Yep, I sure do. So what I did is I had several oyster bags that had already produced mushrooms once. And since the mycelium is still alive in the straw, you can transfer those bags, strip the plastic bag off, and put them into a new substrate. Mm-hmm. And as long as the substrate is fairly clean and has some nutrients in it, the oyster mushroom mycelium will jump off of that straw onto the new fresh substrate and colonize that and then produce mushrooms also. Mm-hmm. So the mushrooms that you're seeing out there are actually still fruiting from the straw that I put out there and then covered with wood chips. But by next spring, that mycelium will hopefully, and it should theoretically, capture most of that sawdust and wood chips that I've covered those bags with. And then come spring, when the temperatures start to get around 60, maybe a little bit higher, they're going to be producing a whole bunch of mushrooms.
But they're producing right now, right?
Yeah, yep, they're still producing, and they'll keep fruiting until it freezes.
That's so cool. So you think of mushrooms as being kind of this really picky, you know, growing thing, but if you can grow them out in your open garden like that, that's something that anybody could really do if they had the right substrate.
Correct, yep. Especially with the oyster mushrooms, they're almost idiot-proof. Some of the other mushrooms do take a lot more exacting parameters as far as temperature, humidity, the amount of light, ventilation. But oyster mushrooms, you know, like I said, if you can boil water, you can grow oyster mushrooms.
What I love about those in the garden there is that you told me that you probably get the mushrooms through the spring, next spring. And then after they've kind of run their course, then you can just till that under or just plant right in it. And you have a great soil amendment.
Exactly. Because what happens is, you know, the mycelium is actually digesting the organic matter, the carbon, the nitrogen, the lignin, the cellulose in that substrate. And as it does so, it releases, you know, the nitrogen, phosphorus, potash, all the nutrients that plants need to grow. The mushroom mycelium is going to provide that by decomposing the wood chips that are out there.
Great double duty for garden space. I think that's a great use of space and resources, and I just love it. I really love any way that we can improve our soil structure, and that just seems perfect. So what about growing other mushrooms? Like, what about growing shiitakes? I know that people sometimes grow those.
The easiest way to grow shiitakes at home would be on hardwood logs. So if you have alder or oak, and sometimes even birch, you can get plug spawn, which is just colonized wooden dowels. You drill holes in the logs, put the plugs in, seal them with wax, and then put them in a shaded area where they're going to get rain or some place where you can keep them, you know, watered so that they don't dry out and die. And with shiitakes, it takes 12 to 18 months on average before the logs will actually produce mushrooms. So it's an exercise in patience. When I first started growing mushrooms, I did about 40 logs. It was time and labor intensive. I did get a lot of mushrooms, but if you just like lots of mushrooms, you know, the oysters on straw are one of the easiest ways to go. Another one that you can do on sawdust and wood chips in your garden is Stropharia. Stropharia rugoso annulata. They call it the garden giant or the wine cap Stropharia. It's a really good mushroom, in my opinion. It's fairly meaty. It's kind of like a portobello in structure and texture, but it has more of a reddish cap and really pretty purple gills underneath. It's really a neat mushroom. Problem with that is the slugs also like the mushrooms too, so unless you really keep an eye on things, they get there first.
You have to be quick.
Yes.
So once you pick your oyster mushrooms, what is some of your favorite ways to prepare them and eat them?
risotto is really good. Mm. Just stir fries, cream of mushroom soup, just sauteed in butter and onions.
I bet you eat a lot of mushrooms here.
You would think so, but, you know, it's kind of like if you have 20 tomato plants, you don't necessarily always eat all the tomatoes. But we have a lot of, outlets for the mushrooms. We sell them sometimes at the farmer's market and through a couple of medical clinics here in town, too.
Huh. I know I've been reading a lot about the medicinal properties of mushrooms and various other things that they are amazing at doing. That is just kind of a lot of new research being done. But that's a whole other show. Can't get into that right now. But I think this is very exciting. And I'm really anxious to give this a little bit more of my attention because I just think this is very much fun. So thank you, Tony, for talking to us. I think that we got some good information here.
Hopefully you have. It's been fun. We are working on our website right now, and hopefully in the next couple of months we'll have some videos. So if you're interested, check in a month or so. It's McMigusFamilyFarm.com.
That's great. Now, before we go, though, do you want to tell us a little bit about the Mushroom Society? Because when I was here, I think we were bagging up a lot of this mushroom spawn that were going to be sold as kits at the mushroom show.
Yeah, that would be the Oregon Mycological Society, based in Portland, Oregon. And every year in October, they have their fall mushroom show, which is October 19th this year, noon to 5 at the World Forestry Center. We have cooking demonstrations with samples. We have cultivation information, and we will be selling shiitake kits and oyster mushroom kits there to answer questions. We're going to have a medicinal mushroom table. We usually have a table devoted to making different colored dyes with mushrooms because you can dye yarn and cotton with mushrooms. And lots of tables of all the wild mushrooms that grow in this area with names. So if you want to learn about, you know, the different mushrooms in the area, which ones are good to eat, which ones you definitely don't want to eat, it's just a great educational opportunity for everybody.
Yeah, I was really impressed at a couple of the meetings that I went to, and the caliber of knowledge that is in those people in this group is really something. Now, you said you're selling shiitake kits. What are those?
The shiitake kits are sawdust-based substrate. So it's kind of like the straw bags that we do, but it's a wood-based substrate because shiitakes don't normally grow on straw. So it's a more complicated process. You actually have to sterilize the substrate and then inoculate it with the shiitake spawn. And it takes 12 to 16 weeks before those bags are normally ready to produce mushrooms. So I have already colonized and ready to fruit shiitake blocks that we'll be selling at the show. So you can take them home, open them up, follow the directions, and within 2 weeks you'll have fresh shiitakes.
That sounds cool. Sounds worth the trip to the Forestry Center for sure. Okay, thank you, Tony.
Thank you.
Gonna plant me a garden.
Gonna plant me a garden.
Gonna make it grow.
Gonna make it grow.
Gonna water.